We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
From Illinois Public Media, this is Focus on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu. Good morning. I'm Celeste Quinn. Harriet Williamson is the producer of Focus. Our technical director this morning is Jason Croft. When NPR's Michelle Norris welcomes Dory Greenspan into her kitchen, all things considered, listeners are in for a treat, a great recipe and a wonderful conversation. It's so wonderful to work with her latest cookbook for the same reason. There are terrific recipes, and Dory's voice comes to you right off the page. It is a voice that is at once comforting and confident and full of very good ideas. Dory Greenspan's new cookbook is Around My French Table, more than 300 recipes from my home to yours. And I'm pleased that Dory Greenspan is our guest this morning on Focus. Listeners, I invite your telephone calls and email messages. I look forward to your questions and comments. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Our toll-free number is 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. And the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Dory Greenspan is an award-winning cookbook author. Her honors include two James Beard Awards. She received one of those awards for her last book, Baking From My Home to Yours. Her new book, Around My French Table, is published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. And if you'd like to visit Dory online, I would encourage you to do that. The address is www.dorygreenspan.com, D-O-R-I-E, greenspan.com. 333-9455, 800-222-9455, and will-talk@illinois.edu. Dory Greenspan, how are you?
I'm happy to be with you. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good.
It's so nice to talk with you. When last we spoke, you were about to catch a plane. And you were on tour with Around My French Table. I hope the tour went well.
The tour was terrific. This morning I was trying to remember what city I was in when we talked and what city I was going to. And I drew a blank. But I did. I loved traveling around and meeting readers and cooks.
And do you have some time off now?
I've got a busy week, and then I'm leaving for Paris on Sunday.
Oh,
so I'll spend the holidays in Paris with my husband. This will actually be our 13th year spending the holidays there. So I'm looking forward to it.
Very good. Well, you made your first trip to France with your husband, Michael. You were recently married, and the two of you were very young. What do you recall most fondly?
Strawberry tart. It was the first. Oh, I mean, that trip was... It was so extraordinary because we were both young. I got married as a kid, and so all of our firsts were together, which was really nice. And we went to Paris. I kind of dragged Michael because he had come into just a couple of $100s, and he was going to put it away and maybe pay his car payments with it. And I instead bought us plane tickets to go. So he was kind of the reluctant traveler. But when we got to Paris, the sun was shining. It was absolutely beautiful. And I had this sense, which I hadn't had before, but I was young, but I haven't had it since, and I'm not so young now, of really belonging there. It was just remarkable. I felt like this was meant to be my home. And the first thing I tasted on French soil was a strawberry tartlet, just one of those little barquettes, the kinds that are, you know, two bites and they're shaped like little boats. And so it was wonderful buttery pastry and pastry cream and three tiny little wild strawberries. And even as I'm describing it to you now, I can taste it. There was something about it, the butter, the textures, and I didn't know. know. I didn't know that much about food when we went, but I knew that this was special and that it was the kind of thing I wanted to have over and over and over again.
You write in the introduction to Around My French Table that everything you tasted was a novelty.
Yes. Yes. It was, I had been cooking, but when we got married, I burned down my parents' kitchen when I was 13, and my parents had suggested that I not cook again. And so when I got married at 19, I hadn't cooked, and I was just learning to cook. And I was adventurous in the kitchen, but I hadn't tasted, even the simplest things in Paris tasted different to me. A crepe, a piece of bread, the butter that you used on the bread. It was, everything did taste new to me.
Yeah. Late in the book, in the section on sweets, you include something that also sounds to me, I'm going to make it, but I haven't yet, a savory treat, and it is essentially a cheesecake, but it's made with chèvre.
Yes.
Tell us about that tort.
This is such an unusual pastry. I'm stuttering because I don't really know what to call it. It fills that space between sweet and savory. When you see it in a French shop and you buy them in the cheese shop, it's round, almost like a ball. And it's a pastry dough on the bottom, like a tart dough. And the top is rounded and jet black, like burnt ash black. And it's something that's it's something that's delicious with wine. And trying to make it at home, I wasn't able to. It's a special pan that you have to use to get that round. And the oven temperature has to be higher than most of our home ovens go. So I reworked the recipe to be able to make a cheesecake that's slightly sweet, but still has that tang of the goat cheese that tort in France has. And also, the texture is very interesting. It's not like a New York cheesecake. It doesn't have that, it's not creamy. It's a little drier and almost cakey. Mm. Almost like a cake. It's one of the most unusual sweets I've ever seen, and it's just delicious.
And what kind of wine would you have with it?
White. I would have a white wine with it. A Sancerre would be great with it. A white wine from the Loire Valley. It would be terrific with champagne.
Mm. Tell us about the shops where you buy your cheese and your fruit and whatnot in Paris.
You know, Celeste, when before we moved to Paris, I mean, I had this, I know I'm a romantic at heart. And all these years that I've been going to Paris and now that I've been living in Paris, I haven't lost any of that. And I had this idea that when I would finally be able to shop in Paris, I would develop a relationship with the shopkeepers, that I would know who they were and that we would talk. And it kind of like you see in those beautiful old French movies. And you know what? It happened. And it happens very, very quickly. I always tease and say, if you go to the same shop twice, you become a regular in Paris. But like around the corner from our apartment is Madame Saucisson, and she sells charcuterie. She sells pâtés and dried sausages and sausages that you need to cook. And I go there as soon as I come to Paris. There are stores that I go to provision, and I always stop at Madame Saucisson, at Michelle's shop, for a very particular kind of sausage. And when she sees me coming down the shop, she moves over to the area where those sausages are, and I can see her squeezing them, trying to find the one that I'm going to like, because I don't like them too hard, and I don't like them too soft. And it's wonderful to have this kind of relationship. We talk about her family. She asks about my family. The cheese shop, it took a while to get to know the cheesewoman and to have her actually think that I was okay, because she discovered that my husband doesn't like goat cheese, and she couldn't believe that anybody who truly cared about food would be married to a man who didn't like goat cheese. But I won her over. You know, and it's just, it's a very different kind of shopping. There are supermarkets, but the best way to shop is to shop for each individual ingredient at a shop that specializes in it, so that you really get the best of what you're looking for. And then you also get the conversation. You get to talk with the cheese man or the cheese woman who really knows cheese and who can help you when you're saying you're having friends for dinner and you'd like a nice cheese platter, and she can help you find, oh, mix a hard cheese with a softer cheese, have one that's strong, have one that's mild, have a goat, have a cow's milk. It's so wonderful to develop these kinds of relationships. Yeah. And they're easy to develop if you're interested in food. The shopkeepers really want to help you.
Yeah. There's a wonderful little story that you tell in the book, Around My French Table, going to buy melons. And the man says to you, what time will you be serving them?
It's so funny. So, yes, I came to him and I said that I wanted melon for the evening. And he hefts a few of the melons and he's squeezing them and he's smelling them. And he says, what time would you like to have the melon? And I said, well, I think we'll be having it at 9. And he says, this melon, this one would be good at 9:15.
That is marvelous.
Oh, and we both laugh, and it's the same joke every time, and we both laugh every time. But it is true that the one time I ever had problems was when I squeezed a plum, and the fruit vendor yelled at me, and it was really my fault. There was a big sign in English that said, please don't touch the fruit. But it is true that the vendors take great pride in their work and in knowing what their products are, and they want to serve you. There's when you go to the markets, the open-air markets, there are some places where you can serve yourself, but for the most part, the vendors would like to serve you because they take pride in knowing what's right, and they want you to have what's best. And I love that.
Yeah, that's so nice. That's so very nice. This is Focus, and our guest this morning in this hour of the program, Dori Greenspan. Her latest book is Around My French Table, more than 300 recipes from my home to yours. My name is Celeste Quinn, and listeners, I invite you to join us this morning with a phone call or by email. The phone number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL, and the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Well, on Saturday evening, my husband and I made a recipe from the book.
What did you make?
We made orange-scented lentil soup.
And?
We loved it, and we will finish it this evening.
Oh, good. Oh, good. I really like the orange in the lentils. I like the kind of brightness that it adds to a very earthy dish.
In addition to the orange, it has a nice hit of ginger.
I like using ginger. And it's interesting because, you know, the recipes in this book are a mix. They're recipes that I make at home. There are recipes that my friends make at home, and then there are some recipes from friends of mine who are chefs. But this is all meant to be, you know, I call it elbows on the table food that you would eat at home and serve to friends at home. It's not chefy food. It's not restaurant-y food. But it's interesting because I look at it as a snapshot of the way people are eating in France today. And the idea of using ginger in a dish would have been considered exotic some years ago. And now ginger is an everyday ingredient. The cuisine is opening up as people travel, as foods become available, widely available in France from other places. I really find that the French are finding a way to bring all of these new ingredients into their traditional cuisine, and I love that.
Yeah. Well, we as Americans are doing the same thing.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think we did it sooner And I think we do it more easily than the French do, because I think we have our food comes from all over to start with, and we have so many regional cuisines that I think we're very open to new ideas. The French have a very a deep and long tradition in food, and it's surprising to see these new flavors come in, and also great, just great.
Yeah. Well, this recipe was so lovely on Saturday evening because we had a big snowstorm, and it was very cold and windy, and it was just so comforting, and it smelled so good.
Oh, I'm so glad.
And the ginger felt so warming, and it's so lovely to be inside and feel safe, and then zest an orange, you know, peel a piece from the orange. And it was surprising how lovely just a tiny little bit of orange, how that made that soup so interesting.
You're right. It doesn't take much. I have a friend in Paris, Mary Lynn, and she gave me a recipe for fabulous apple cake, Mary Lynn's apple cake. But she always, when I'm in her kitchen, there are always peels around the stove. So if she's had an orange, she'll leave the peel near the stove. If she's had a tangerine. And I said, what do you do with it? And she said, well, sometimes I just put it into whatever I'm cooking. Sometimes I just burn a little bit of it on the gas flame just because it smells nice. And I've taken to holding on to my peels because there's always a time when you can just put a tiny little bit of orange into something and have it make a big difference. It's a great little picker-upper.
Yeah. Well, it inspired me to make a very simple dressing for our salad. It was just olive oil and a splash of orange juice, salt, and pepper.
Oh, nice.
And I don't know if I could maybe do something a little bit more creative, but I thought, well, this will be very simple and
capture. And nice to have the orange carry over into the salad.
Yeah, and then a big, nice baguette with good butter, and we were happy, happy, happy.
Oh, you had a good night. We haven't had. I mean, I'm in New York, and we haven't had snow yet. Now that I've said it, I'm probably going to be sorry.
Well, hopefully you won't have to travel if it's snowing come the weekend, right?
Oh, I hope not.
Yeah.
I hope not.
Yeah.
But as it gets cooler, I think soup, just a big pot of soup, makes it's perfect as a weekend supper.
Yeah, and this was so simple to do. It went together very quickly. So,
good. I hope you will be. I hope you will be cooking other things from the book. I know I'm going to be making. It's so funny. I have a request to make onion soup in Paris when I get there. I have a French friend who loves my onion soup, which I think is just the biggest compliment I could ever get.
Wow!
And so I'll be making it for her when I get to Paris next week.
Yeah. One of the things I'm looking forward to making, and maybe I'll have time to do it this week, is the chicken, the roast chicken for the lazy people.
You know, I have gotten so much mail from readers about this recipe. They've been so happy with it. It's such a funny recipe because, I mean, it's perfect. It's so easy. It's chicken that you roast in a Dutch oven. So it means that nothing spatters all over your regular oven, but it also means that the heat of the Dutch oven browns the chicken very nicely. You don't have to baste. You do nothing with it. And one of the things that makes this recipe so special is the piece of bread that you put under the chicken. And so if you have a chicken liver, sometimes chickens don't come with giblets any longer, but if you've got a liver, you just put it into the chicken and let it roast inside the chicken. And then when the chicken is roasted in this Dutch oven, you take the piece of bread before anybody else comes into the kitchen. It's just for you. And then you just take the liver out of the chicken and spread it on that bread and just enjoy that before you serve the rest of the meal. Somebody said to me, oh, I can't thank you enough for chicken bread. And I said, what are you talking about? And she said, well, I don't really care about the chicken. I just want that piece of bread that's under the chicken, because all of the juice from the chicken gets absorbed by that bread, and the bread gets toasty from being at the bottom of the Dutch oven. That's a little side treat that's really, really special. But the recipe is so simple.
How do you keep people out of your kitchen, Dory?
Oh, I don't even want to keep people out of my kitchen.
Oh, okay.
I love having people
all
around.
Right.
My kitchen in New York, no one ever comes into. It's just too small. It's the kitchen that if you go to my blog, that's the one you see in up the top of the blog. It's long, and it's only about 6 feet wide, maybe less than that, because I can stand in the center of the kitchen and put my arms out and touch both walls. It's really, really narrow, and so people don't venture in. But my kitchen in Connecticut is my kitchen, my office, and the dining room, and I love having people around me when I'm cooking.
Oh. So you have to make roast chicken for lazy people in your New York kitchen.
That's right, where no one can come in and
That's
grab
right.
that piece of bread from me. All mine.
Yeah. So this goes together very quickly and simply, and it's essentially a roast chicken with roast vegetables.
That's right, all in one pot, and you don't have to do, once you put it in the pot, you have nothing to do.
Yeah.
And it really is, the chicken comes out crispy skinned and tender inside. It's just a really simple recipe, and these are the kinds of recipes that I love. I find that when I was first learning how to cook, I felt that everything had to be difficult. Because every time I was cooking something or baking something, I felt like I had to be learning something. And I still feel that way sometimes, but not as much. I mean, I used to think that if I invited friends for dinner, if I didn't spend the entire day cooking, then this wasn't going to be a good dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And now everything's changed. Now the emphasis is on my friends. I want to serve them good food, but I want to spend all my time with them. I don't want to be exhausted when they come to the door. I don't want to be running back and forth to the kitchen to serve them. It's really more about the people than the food. And so obviously I want the food to be delicious.
Mm-hmm.
But so I find myself really looking for recipes that will be great tasting and won't need last-minute work, won't need an entire day to put together, that will just draw people to the table and keep them there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's become important to me now.
Mm. One of the things that I found interesting is that the French are, like us, very busy people. What kinds of shortcuts do your French friends favor?
Oh, they do. They won't always tell you what they do. But, in fact, most of the time they won't tell you. But it's very hard to find chicken broth in French markets. And so my friends use bouillon cubes. They'll use ready-made doughs. And luckily for them, French doughs that you buy in the refrigerator case of the supermarket,
mm-hmm.
Tarte dough, sweet, tarte dough for a quiche that would be savory, or puff pastry, are made with all butter. So they're really
mm-hmm.
good. But I don't know any of my friends who make their own tarte dough.
Really?
There's this great, I've actually, okay, I'm a convert to these little potato pellets. They're nothing but potatoes that have been steamed and mashed. And then, I don't know how they do them. They almost look like they were piped out. And then cut into little 5-gram pellets. And you just put them in a pot with milk. And they make great mashed potatoes. I was at a friend's house, and her husband, who never talks about food, said to me, "Do you like the mashed potatoes?" I said, "They're great." He said, "Really think so?" I said, "Yeah, I think they're delicious." And then as we were leaving, he said again, "You did like the mashed potatoes, didn't you?" And I said, "Yeah." Well, it wasn't until we got our own apartment and I started shopping that I thought back to that conversation and realized that she had probably made the potatoes from these little pellets.
Huh.
and just hadn't told us. But I find that what my French friends will do is they'll mix and match. They'll buy something ready-made. Maybe they'll buy a ready-made gougère, and they'll put a little cheese, a grated cheese on top, a little, you know, gougère is a cheese puff, and maybe they'll warm it in the oven with a little bit of grated cheese on top. So they'll dress up something ready-made. Or they'll buy, they'll make this fabulous mousse for dessert. It took me forever to get this recipe. This mousse was so good. And when I finally got the recipe, my friend said to me, well, actually what she did was I kept saying, will you give it to me? She said, oh, I'll give it to you. And one day at the end of dinner when we were alone, she handed me a chocolate bar. And I said, well, thank you, but why are you giving this to me? And she turned it over, and the recipe for the mousse was on the back of the chocolate bar.
Yeah.
And when I told this to another friend of mine, she said, oh, yeah, that's the recipe we all make. I'm surprised she told you.
Yeah.
But it's a little bit like I sometimes feel that the way the French use convenience foods is the way they dress. It's similar to the way they dress, so that you might see a woman wearing a pair of jeans, but she might have a Chanel jacket over it. So it's that kind of mix of, you know, high-low.
I wish we would have some of these products in our markets. I think it would be lovely to have tart dough ready to go.
Oh, I have asked anybody who would listen to me if they would manufacture it. It's funny because I had dinner at someone's home who was just a wonderful woman and not a very wonderful cook, and she made this great quiche. And I said to her, "Your crust is so great," and she just said, "Thank you." And later a friend said to me, well, you know she didn't make that crust. She bought that from the supermarket.
Yeah.
And it makes such a difference if you can get a good quality crust. Because I know that, I mean, I love making tart dough. I mean, that's just, it's a specialty of mine, and I enjoy the process of it. But I think a lot of people won't take the time for it, or they're a little nervous about it.
Yeah.
And we're missing the opportunity of just, you know, taking 10 minutes to just whip up a quiche filling and make it, or just slice some apples with cinnamon sugar and butter and make a delicious homemade dessert.
Yeah.
Maybe somebody will do this one day.
Yeah. What do you think about the pie crust that you can find in the refrigerated section in the States?
I don't think it has any taste.
Yeah.
You know, I wish, I would love, you know, I would love if there were a good product. The ones that I've tried, they're not made with butter, so they don't have that delicious butter flavor, and they really don't have much flavor, and they don't have great texture. So I guess I don't like them.
Yeah, they're a little salty, I think, too.
Well, it's funny because I love salt in both sweet and savory, but I sometimes think that it's used as a cover-up. If there isn't another flavor, then there's salt.
Yeah.
No, I know they are salty.
Well, I would love to go to the supermarket and find some tart dough, lovely tart dough, and come home and make Girard's mustard tart.
Oh, that is such a good tart. That is such a good tart. It's like, I love that. It's like a cheeseless quiche, in a sense. So it's a custard of eggs and cream and plenty of mustard. And Girard made it for me in the winter, and so he made it with steamed leeks, very, very thinly sliced leeks, and very thinly sliced carrots on top. But the traditional tart, mustard tart, comes from Lyon, from Dijon, sorry, and it's normally made with tomatoes, and that makes a great summer tart.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a surprise to have that hit of mustard, that little bit of heat that you get from mustard.
I think this sounds lovely, and I'm going to have to now just plunge in and make tart dough.
You know, tart dough is tart dough is much easier to make than pie dough. Neither is difficult, but tart dough really is easy to make. And if you make it in a food processor, you could even press just press the dough in, little pieces, you know, take little pieces of dough and press it into the pan if you're not confident about rolling.
Mm. This looks so beautiful. I can almost smell it as I'm looking at the photo in the book. And it's so simple. It's a, basically a quiche. It's heavy cream and Dijon and grainy mustard.
Mm-hmm.
And what am I leaving out here?
Some eggs.
Some eggs, yes.
Yeah.
And some rosemary and the leeks and the carrots and voila.
Gerard is the husband of my friend Sylvie, and they own a bed and breakfast outside of Dijon. And he's just an instinctive cook. He just kind of smells and feels his way around the kitchen and around a recipe. And I loved watching him make this. He didn't measure anything, and I kept stopping him and saying, no. I knew he was a good cook, and when I came to visit them, I came with American cup measures and spoon measures, because I was hoping that he would make something that I would be able to use for the book. And in fact, he made this tart, and I stopped him at each step so that I could measure what he was. He said, but sometimes you want a little more. I said, okay, but, all right, but just let me measure this, and then we'll take into account the little bit more of mustard that someone might want.
Yeah, you say do what Gerard would do. Smell it first. This is the mustard.
Yes.
If it just about brings tears to your eyes, it's fresh enough for this tart. This reminds me of cooking it. I'm not a good cook, but I'm passable. But anyway, when I am cooking, I'm lucky to be married to a guy who's a pretty good cook. But when I'm cooking, I'll go to him in another part of the house, and I'll say to him, how does it smell from where you are? And if it smells good, I know I'm on the right track. Because sometimes when you're in the kitchen, you're overwhelmed by everything. And I think if you go off to another part of the house and you go,
isn't that interesting?
Oh.
Of course you're right. I was making a different cheese tart, a sweet cheese tart, with my friend Elise. And as we were making it, she said, it smells the way it smelled when I made this as a child.
Mm.
And she said, when it smells right, you know it's right. I think smell in cooking is so important. I mean, of course, smell and taste is vital, but it's really important that we smell ingredients. And I love that you go to your husband in the other part of the house to say, how does it smell from where you are? because as Elise said, if it smells right, it is right.
Mm, yeah. And it also is something to keep in mind, that food and cooking is a feast for all the senses, each and every one. Well, yeah, because if you're sautéing, you can even hear it, right?
Exactly. But it's, you know, it is, I find it's a pleasure to cook. It's a pleasure to bake. And it is because it's sensual just as you said, that you're touching the ingredients, you're smelling them. You're looking at them, you're arranging them so that they're beautiful. You are using all of your senses. And it's also that when you're finished, you're sharing it. Most of us cook, I often cook for myself when I'm alone. But it's so nice to cook and share food. And if we bake, we almost always share what we bake. Mm. And that's such an important part of the process, the sharing.
Yeah. Now, you and your husband and your son, do you cook together?
We used to cook together more than we do. My husband has become the cleaner-upper. So, and I'm delighted.
That's lovely.
I don't like doing dishes. So he does some of the kind of heavy stuff. He carves. He'll do some chopping, but mostly I do the cooking. If my son is home, then I love to be in the kitchen with him. I really enjoy cooking with him, and we have a nice a nice balance. We kind of work together well and know what the other one is doing. It's interesting. My husband used to cook with me more. I have to have a talk with him. Why has he given up? But he cleans, and there's nothing I like more than to be finished and not have to do the dishes. It's just, there are some people, he finds it meditative to do dishes.
Yeah, I don't mind doing the dishes.
No, that's I don't want that job, thank you.
Okay.
I'll cook for days and days and days.
You're on.
Okay, it's a deal.
Okay.
I'll cook, you can do the dishes.
Dori Greenspan is our guest this morning in this portion of Focus. Listeners, I'd love to hear from you this morning. Join us with a phone call or by email, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, toll-free 800-222-9455. And the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. That's W-I-L-L-Illinois. No, wait. Let me back up. will-talk@illinois.edu. There we go. Dori Greenspan's latest book is Around My French Table, More Than 300 Recipes from My Home to Yours. It seems to me that this book is a bit of a new venture for you because you've written so much about baking.
It's true. It's true. This is my 10th book. And with the exception of the book that I wrote with Danielle Boulou, the Café Boulou cookbook, and those were Danielle's recipes, all of my other books have been about baking. And I teasingly say that this book is proof that in the 30 years that I was feeding my husband and son desserts, I was making them eat their vegetables first. I was a responsible mother and wife. I have been cooking for as long as I've been baking. But baking became, I love baking, and it is what I had done professionally, and I'm fascinated by it. But I've always cooked, and it was a treat for me to be able to collect these recipes from friends and to be able to record my own recipes. It was like, you know, when I wrote Baking From My Home to Yours, I said it was a record of 30 years, of more than 30 years, really, of my baking at home. And I said that if I had kept a kitchen diary, if I had been neat enough to keep a diary or a journal, that's what it would have been. Well, I look at Around My French Table, and it covers about the same period that baking does. And I think this is baking's savory sister. This is the bookend to the baking book. And together, I think of both of the books as being very personal. And together, they're my culinary biography.
That's interesting. I think that's a wonderful way that you have on the page. And in my introduction, I really wanted to let people know that they will hear you.
Thank you.
They will hear you. This is a very personal book, and so was the baking book that came right before this one.
And I think these are really the stories of, they are life stories because, this is what I do. These recipes come from my daily life in France and in New York. I mean, if you came to visit me in Paris, I'll be there next week. Come on. if you came to visit me in Paris, I would cook for you recipes from Around My French Table. But if you came to visit me in New York, that's also what I would be cooking for you. This is the way I cook.
Let's take a call. This is a listener in Belgium, and that's Belgium, Illinois. Line 4. Good morning.
Good morning, ma'am, and good morning to your guest. The question I have, and now I understand that you are a Francophile, and you do love French food. But the question I have for you, and it's always kind of plagued me, is why do people think French food is the best food in the world when there's so many different types of food that all have very interesting cuisines? And, you know, but yet everybody thinks, when you first think of food, you think, oh, French food. But
that's an interesting question. It's a very, very interesting question. Okay, I'm not sure I have an answer for this, but I'll tell you what I think. French food is one of the only cuisines that's been codified. that's really been studied and written in a way that it can be passed along. And Escoffier did that. And there are techniques that can be taught. And I wonder if that doesn't have something to do with the sense, because you're right, when people talk about great cuisines of the world, French food comes up immediately, and there are other fabulous, fabulous cuisines. You're right, I'm a Francophile, I happen to adore French food, but that doesn't mean that I don't think Asian food is great or Italian food, but I think that that French food holds a special place because of the way it's been studied and the training that French chefs get and the way it gets passed along from generation to generation. That's just my guess.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the call.
Interesting question.
Other calls are invited. 333-9455. Toll-free 800-222-9455. And our email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Well, in France, are there restaurants, like, say, for example, a Chinese restaurant or a North African restaurant or...
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. There are other restaurants. There are... There are all Vietnamese restaurants. Mm. There are North African restaurants. I mean, Indochina, the whole Southeast Asian area was a French colony. North African countries, now countries, were French colonies. And so there is that food. There's also, these days in Paris, the hottest food is Italian food. Everybody wants to eat Italian food. There's a new Italian restaurant opening up all the time. There is, you can find other cuisines, but when you talk to French people, they like their own food. They like French cooking.
Yeah, I don't blame them.
I don't blame them either.
What do they think of so-called American food?
This is a sad story. French people who have traveled understand how interesting and varied and refined American food is. But I can't tell you the number of times I get into a French taxi and the driver will ask me where I come from and I'll say I'm American and he'll say, hamburgers.
Mm.
That's his first response. And, he just doesn't know. He hasn't traveled here. But you're seeing, it's interesting, there's a young American chef who went to France and trained and now has a restaurant in Paris called Spring. His name is Daniel Rose. He comes from Chicago, actually, and he is giving Americans a very good name. People are really understanding that he is an American who's making food that they respect. That, yes, he was trained in France, but he's managed to take his American sensibility and his French training and bring them together.
Mm.
I think people who know, people who travel, people who read, understand that American food is a whole lot more than hamburgers. Yeah.
We have an email message now from someone who would like you to take us through the recipe for the orange ginger lentil soup.
Okay.
And it's on page 90.
Thank you.
And,
I
think if I was to make this again or if we were to make it again, I think we would put it through. We used an immersion blender,
mm-hmm.
but I think I would put it into the food processor or into the blender.
Yeah, I find for soups, I use my food processor a lot, mostly for baking. But I find for soups, the blender really gives you the smoothest soup. So for the orange-scented lentil soup, you've got what the French would call the aromatics. So two onions and two celery stalks and one large carrot, all peeled and trimmed and cut. And you just soften those, cook them for about 10 minutes until they're soft in some olive oil or butter. And Then you add 6 cups of chicken or vegetable broth, and then a cup of French lentils, and those are the very dark green, almost slate gray lentils. You just rinse them. You don't have to soak them. And then a strip of orange or tangerine peel, and peppercorns, coriander seeds, a clove, and some chopped ginger. And so that all goes into the pot, and then you bring it to a boil, lower the heat, cover it, and then just let it simmer very, very gently for about 60 to 90 minutes. The time, it's hard, always hard to give timing with lentils because it depends on the age of the lentils. And you salt this soup. Usually with beans and lentils, I'm considering a bean. You don't salt as you start to cook. You wait until the beans have cooked for a while, and then you season with salt. So I wait about 45 minutes or so and season it, and then blend it.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to top it with a little bit of yogurt. I mean, you can top it with cream or with sour cream, but I find that slight tang, the slight little sourness of yogurt is really nice with this lentil soup.
And a little bit of bacon.
Oh, bacon helps everything taste better.
It was fun to read that bacon can be found everywhere in France. At the convenience market at the gas station, you
exactly,
can buy bacon.
Exactly, exactly, and usually cut in lardons, in those little strips that are just perfect for putting into a quiche or topping a soup or tossing with vegetables to put around a roast chicken.
Yeah.
Yep, they're everywhere.
Let's take another call. This is a listener in Urbana on line one. Hi.
Hello. I'm calling because this is very topical for me. On Saturday, I made a trifle for some people who came for dinner. And they were raving about it. And I always make it in the only one of 5 wedding presents I had, a cut glass bowl, because I was in Canada when I was married. And only I had about 5 special presents that have gone around the world. And this cut glass bowl is one of them. My husband is Persian. He cooked 2 beautiful horeshes. And I did a lot of dishes, which you were mentioning. And so I came up with the trifle, and as I said, the people were just crazy about it. And I made the cake very simple with eggs, flour, and sugar. And in England, they say you should use lady fingers, but they're very dry, so I never use those. Oh. And then I put 1/2 a bottle of Harvey's Bristle cream on top.
Well, that could make it taste good.
I know. It was wonderful. And then I made the Jell-O with jelly and boiled 2 cups of pomegranate juice so it wasn't so sweet. And then I just, as I was a little bit late, I got a bag of strawberries, chopped them up, frozen, and put them right into the boiling Jell-O. And within about 10 minutes, it had almost gelled. So I, when it was cold, I put that on top and then made some bird's custard.
I was waiting for you to say you used bird's custard.
And that turned out really well. When it was cold, I put that on top and then a layer of bananas and then a layer of whipped cream. And then some slithered, whatever you call them, almonds that we toasted a little bit. And then I put 2 dried roses in the middle. And when I brought it to the table, because, you know, I was feeling a bit left out because my husband had made all these lovely Persian stews. But when I brought my my trifle, they were really thrilled with it, and everybody loved it. And, of course, they said, well, you know, I suppose my husband said it probably came from France, trifle, or however you pronounce it. But still, it tasted great with an English name.
Oh, it sounds just fabulous. It must have looked so beautiful.
Oh, it does. I've made it for people who don't drink from the Middle East and people who do. I make 2 of them, and quite often they, you know, coax me into letting them have a little of the one with the sherry in it. So I've made them for years and years, but this, I've suddenly got it down to a fine art with the frozen fruit because it makes it so much quicker. It just seems to get cold very, very quickly. So I used to wait for a long time till the Jell-O had gelled because you don't want it to sort of slip down around the cake because it looks a bit messy.
Celeste and I were talking earlier about the convenience foods, and that's a perfect example of using two good quality convenience foods, the frozen strawberries and the bird's custard.
Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever tried to make custard for the trifle. I just could not manage to bother with that. You know,
I'll tell you a little secret. Many, many years ago, I worked with a pastry chef in a very, very famous French restaurant, and he was making trifle. And I said, oh, I can't wait to see how you make the custard. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, you're not going to see it this time because I use bird's custard.
Yeah. Well, I had the custard. They asked me to tell them how I made it, and because of people I hadn't been here before. And I got out the box of bird's custard in the packets, and I noticed on the front it said, use sugar and milk. Of course, I used the milk, but I'd forgotten the sugar for the first time in 40 years. But I think that was good because the Jell-O is, I don't think even that had sugar in, but somehow or other, there's quite a lot of sugar that builds up if you're not careful. And so that what?
Oh.
Thanks very much.
Thanks very much for the call this morning. We lost her for just a second there. Well, very quickly, we have to wrap up here, but tell us just a little bit about bird's custard. Where do I find it?
Well, I used to be able to find it in the supermarket.
Yeah.
I haven't bought it for a while, but it is just a custard mix. It's powdered, and it makes something very similar to pastry cream.
Ooh.
And as I said, I first learned about it from this French chef who was using it in his restaurant. And I said, how did you find out about it? He said, when I worked in London, that's what everyone used.
Oh.
And I bet you it's still in the supermarket.
Okay, well, I will look for
it. When she said trifle, I just was waiting for bird's custard to be part of it.
We have to wrap up now. Dori Greenspan, it's just been a pleasure, as always.
I love spending time with you. Thank you so much.
Well, have a happy, happy time in Paris.
Thank you, and a happy holiday to you and to all the listeners.
All right. Have a wonderful, happy, prosperous New Year, Dori Greenspan.
Thank you, and to you.
Dori Greenspan's latest book is Around My French Table, More Than 300 Recipes from My Home to Yours. The publisher is Houghton Mifflin Harcourt.